and Carrie to get haircuts. And it's an old school kind of barbershop. There are leather straps that they use to strap the razors. And there's a shoe sign stand, and you can't make an appointment. And it's an old school barbershop. And like a lot of barbershops, there's all kinds of conversations that take place between the barbers and the customers. And I usually hold my breath when we're in there because one of the barbers in particular is rather free with his opinions. And let us just say that his opinions and my opinions are not very similar. And so what I hope for each time that I'm in there is that we can get through the 30 minutes or so it takes with my kids in the chair, and that I won't have to bite my tongue too much while they're getting their haircut. But last week when I took the boys to get their haircuts, I did not get what I hoped for. The man in the chair asked the barber that was cutting his hair what he thought about all this coronavirus stuff that at that time was sort of starting to make its way into the news. And the barber said, oh man, that's all fake news. And my head just sort of dropped. And I thought about how dangerous it could be for somebody who has their hands on other people all day, with folks in and out and in all kinds of proximity, to not take this stuff seriously, that it could be dangerous to him and to everyone else. And I lift that moment up because I think there's, as I thought about that moment, that exchange, I think that moment is somewhat emblematic of the breakdowns that we're facing right now in our life together. First, here is somebody who is deeply distrustful of certain institutions in our life together. And we see this a lot happening in our conversations right now, scientists and physicians and media members and public health professionals and policy experts. And there are so many voices coming to us in the media. And these are people who make up systems, and we rely on these systems in moments like these. We are dependent on what they're telling us about how this virus is transmitted and the best steps for us to take and whether we should be gathering or not. And he's sort of disregarded them entirely. Now, there, of course, are there reasons to think critically about the information that we're being given, where it's coming from, why it's being presented in a particular way. But we can analyze and critique the voices that we hear until we arrive at a place where we hear only what we want to hear. That is, if I want to think this is all fake and it's all an illusion, then that's what I those are the voices that I gravitate to, not necessarily the voices that are telling me to be more cautious than I might like to be. And so we write off people who are trying to relay vital information to us. And the thing is, there are many, many precautions that I can take that can be undone by one of my neighbors who is reacting flippantly to something that could be dangerous or life-threatening to lots of people. Of course, fortunately, most folks seem to have responded and are exercising some precautions and a sense of care and concern. But what we've seen is that we've had to overcome a sense of distrust between one another to be able to get to this point where we've had some unanimity on decisions that need to be made. And there's still on the news, folks, news of folks crowding bars and restaurants, and that tells you something about how much folks are really listening to one another in our community, how much folks are listening to what's being said by the people that we count on to know these things, and yet they're being disregarded. And then, of course, in the stores, in the grocery stores, things like toilet paper and antibacterial soap and hand sanitizer and cleaning supplies are just gone off the shelves. They were flying off the shelves. Now they're just gone. People are hoarding these things for their own use or to give to their close friends and family. And I know that lots of you, I know from social media that lots of you have experienced this over the last few days, trying to go get just a few things from the store and everything is gone. And really what this is self-destruction dressed up as self-interest. Because in this case, our own health and well-being is inextricably bound up, as it usually is, in the well-being of our neighbors. So if your neighbor doesn't have access to hand sanitizer and antibacterial soap, if your neighbor doesn't have access to all of those things that you want to hoard for yourself, then it doesn't really matter how much of those things you have of your own. We need each other to be healthy in this time. And so self-interest that grows out of control, it undoes our sense of belonging to one another. And what we're discovering in these days is not only how connected we are to one another, but how much my well-being, your well-being is bound up in everyone's well-being. We're discovering just how connected we are and how difficult it is to separate ourselves from one another, even in casual ways. We are deeply connected, and so we need to have an interest in everyone's well-being. And what we're seeing right now is this this self-interest going out of control, and it's really can turn into self-destruction. And not the least of which was on display there in the barbershop are drastically different ideologies that exist between people who live and work in the same communities. And how little patience and how little tolerance we have for each other, and what little ability we possess to engage each other in meaningful ways. And I'm saying all this as somebody who struggles deeply personally with this, because of course I listen to that and I think there's not room for this type of mindset, this idea that there is no such thing as truth and that is somehow cool and rebellious to deny the expertise of people who are at the top of their fields, and that we can be flippant about issues that are facing and affecting people who are vulnerable, and to not take seriously those things. To me, it shows a lack of compassion and empathy. It's hard for me to stomach that and just say, oh, well, let live and let live, you know. So tolerance is maybe not something that I'm necessarily aiming for, because personally, I believe there's some things that just can't be tolerated. But our communities are not well served by these fundamental differences becoming increasingly entrenched. And then the less we're able to talk to each other, the less we feel even inclined to engage one another, the less work we're actually doing to forge common values, to work out common things that can improve the way we live together, the less we are able to engage one another in meaningful ways, the less work we are doing figuring out how to live more faithfully together. And I'm not saying that we have to tolerate attitudes that are toxic to our life together and to real vulnerable people that have real life implications. But what I'm saying is that community is about relationships. And we need to understand how to have relationships with one another that make transformation possible. Because we've been visiting that barbershop for a long time. And everybody in there knows who we are, and they know what I do, and they respect what I do. And likely I do have a chance to engage in some meaningful way and to build deeper relationships and to have a conversation that could be transformative. But to this point, I've not been willing to have those conversations. I've chosen to bury my face in my phone instead and just try to ignore it and get to the end and get out and not have to hear it anymore. But community is about working these things out together. And we don't do that when we hide who we are and we hide who we value, even in front of those who don't share those values. So there's a lot about this interaction between Jesus and the Samaritan woman that highlights a lot of the same breakdowns in community that we face. And this interaction there, it highlights the breakdowns in the community that this woman and Jesus are both living in. Jews and Samaritans had an adversarial relationship. Okay, however you want to describe it in modern terms, whether you want to think of it as, you know, in some periods of our history, Catholics and Protestants, or Republicans and Democrats, or whatever, they had an adversarial relationship. There were fundamental differences in the way that they understood who God was, how to practice God's presence in their lives, fundamental differences in what faithfulness required. And John says that Jews did not have things in common with Samaritans. They're separated. And yet, they live in proximity to each other, which we hear, you know, happening in the Gospels. And so there's people who think and believe and move so much differently, but here they are in the same general place. And in this passage, Jesus bridges the ideological gap between them. And he does this in a way that surprises the woman. She's surprised that he's engaging her, and so are the disciples. And he begins to offer a different way of seeing their relationship, a different way for these people to understand the world when they've seen the world differently, and a way of, for these people to begin to interact with one another even though they see the world differently. And they may not ultimately change the way they see the world, but they at least can begin to speak to one another, interact with one another, and try to work out what their common ground might be. And the other barrier here is her gender. It's a man, a Jewish man, associating with a Samaritan woman. And we can't project our modern sensibilities about marriage and relationships onto this woman. It's likely that, you know, she's been married a bunch of times, but it's likely that she didn't have a whole lot of say in those marriages, not the way we do now about our partners and who we choose to be with. And in those days, marriage was not so much a romantic endeavor as much as it was about economic and material survival, that women needed to be married to a man to have economic stability. And so in this culture, she's not seen as an equal, and her status as a woman means being at risk for significant use and abuse. And when this is the case, when one person's identity puts them at risk because of that identity, then we have a fractured communities. Our communities are not what they should be. And even now, we're seeing that certain folks in our communities are more at risk than others, aren't they? Some of our seniors are more at risk than others. People with depressed immune systems are more at risk. Children and families who depend on free and reduced lunch to eat daily are disproportionately affected by the schools being shut down. Think about women and children who are in domestic violence situations. And what it means for them to be quarantined in a place where they might not be safe. And so these things, when we're not all affected the same way, when our particular identity makes us more vulnerable, it highlights the brokenness in our communities that need mending. So over these last couple of weeks, a lot of you know that our family has been on a journey together, and we have been reminded over these last couple of weeks about the strength of community and how much it means to have people around you who love you and support you, and how much it means to have people who are willing to take care of you in a particular moment. And so we've been in some ways in closer contact with people than we might not otherwise be. We've been in touch with people that we're not in regular contact with because all of this has happened. And all of a sudden this community surges to the front and we realize how important that is. And the same is true for us, at least, and maybe for you in the era of COVID-19 in these days. We've been in more, maybe not as close a contact, but more frequent contact with our neighbors to talk about what each of us might need you know, in this time. And even for this worship experience, we went to certain lengths this morning to create an experience that we could share simultaneously, that we could all be doing this together at the same time, because we need community, not just for our basic needs, but we need the sense of belonging and the sense of connectedness and the love and fidelity that community provides. And so I think if there's grace for us to find in this moment, in this cultural moment, it is the opportunity to discover the value of living in community, how important community is. And this moment is shining a light. It's shining a light on the places where our communities have broken down, where there's distrust in our institutions, where there's inequality, or where political and ideological differences that we have prevent us from making common sense decisions in the interest of our health, even to exposing the dangers of some folks having way more than they need while others have nothing at all. And so we have an opportunity, I think, in this moment to do the slow and intentional work of mending that community calls us to. I think one of the things about the common threads in this series is that mending takes time, and fixing something takes time, and it can mean patience and summoning patience and understanding that we don't necessarily like to exercise. And it can mean actually having to try more than one solution. Maybe the first thing that I do doesn't fix it and I have to try again. And it's a whole lot easier to throw people away, especially people that I don't agree with. It's a whole lot easier for me to write them off and to say, well, we're never going to share anything in common, or we're never going to be able to see things together. And so why bother? It's a whole lot easier to do that. That's actually the path of least resistance. And to work on mending, putting things back together, is something that's more intentional. But in our passage this morning, I think Jesus calls us to that. He calls us to interactions and to doing the work that crosses boundaries and takes the risk of trying to knit things back together, because community is stronger. Community is deeper. Community is more loving when we are in relationship to one another than when we're isolated in our own places. And so even as we're isolated in our own places, I think we have a sense of our connection to each other more deeply than we might otherwise. We understand, we're feeling what it means to be separate from one another. We're feeling what it means to see our neighbors in a different way. And so I want to invite you to let the Spirit work on you as you are quarantined, as you're in your own space, to reach out to the people who are in close proximity to you, maybe not physically, but in a safe way, to find out what they need. And you may find that there's common ground with some people that you didn't know, or that you can forge relationships with people that you didn't have. And I think that is the gift and the saving grace of community. I think God gives us this gift of belonging to one another. And when we take it for granted, things begin to fall apart. And so Christ calls us to the work of knitting those things back together again.